Welcome to the brain's quantum leap. I'm fascinated by the intersection of quantum physics and consciousness, especially how quantum phenomena might explain aspects of cognition.
It's a compelling area. I'm particularly drawn to the philosophical implications. If quantum mechanics plays a role in consciousness, what does that mean for free will? For the very nature of reality, even?
Exactly. It challenges our fundamental understanding of the mind and brain. So let's dive in. The quantum mind or quantum consciousness hypothesis essentially argues that classical mechanics alone can't fully explain consciousness.
Right. It suggests that quantum phenomena like entanglement and superposition operating at subcellular levels in the brain could be the missing piece of the puzzle.
But it's a fringe theory, right? I mean, there's no definitive scientific validation yet.
Yeah, definitely still hypothetical. There's a lot of skepticism, like Victor Stenger called it a myth, no scientific basis whatsoever. But then you have figures like Eugene Wigner, way back when, proposing that consciousness actually causes wave function collapse.
Oh, really? I hadn't heard that take.
Yeah, and Freeman Dyson argued that mind, the capacity for choice, is inherent in every electron. Pretty radical stuff. Of course, most physicists and philosophers weren't convinced.
It does seem like a big leap. What about David Chalmers? He's a big name in consciousness studies.
Chalmers is skeptical, too. He argues that quantum theories of consciousness have the same fundamental problems as classical theories. He doesn't see why quantum features should give rise to consciousness any more than macroscopic brain features do. The hard problem, you know?
I see. Interesting. So how do these quantum mind theories actually approach the problem? The input text mentions Bohm and Hindley.
Bohm saw quantum theory and relativity as pointing to a deeper level of reality, an implicate order. Mind and matter, he thought, emerge from this implicate order, like projections into our explicate order. It's a dual aspect theory, essentially.
So not a reductionist view, then?
No, Bohm never actually proposed a testable mechanism, though. No neural correlates for his implicate order.
Got it. Then there's Penrose and Hameroff and their orchestrated objective reduction theory, or ORCHO-R.
Right. ORCHO-R Penrose argued, based on Gatow's incompleteness theorems, that consciousness is non-computable. He linked this to objective reduction, a hypothetical form of wave function collapse related to gravity. Hameroff brought in the microtubules as the biological structures where these collapses might happen.
Microtubules? Those tiny protein structures inside neurons?
Yeah. Hameroff proposed that quantum coherence and entanglement could occur among the tubulin subunits within microtubules.
But wouldn't decoherent be a problem? The brain's a pretty warm and noisy environment.
Absolutely. Tegmark's calculations suggested decoherence would happen way too fast for quantum effects to be relevant to consciousness. But there's been some pushback with arguments that Tegmark's estimates were off and that certain conditions could allow for longer coherence times.
Mm. Interesting. So the jury's still out on that one.
Definitely. And more recent experiments with anesthetics, like the ones at the University of Alberta and Princeton, have provided some intriguing results that could support quantum processes in microtubules, although the connection to consciousness is still a long shot.
What about the work of Umezawa, Vitiello, and Freeman? They used quantum field theory, didn't they?
Yes. Umezawa and collaborators proposed a quantum field theory of memory storage, where memory states are represented by vacuum states of quantum fields. Vitiello and Freeman then developed a dialogue model of the mind with interactions between classical and quantum parts of the brain, quite a different approach from Penrose and Hameroff.
So multiple ways of applying quantum concepts to the brain. What are some of the main criticisms of these quantum mind theories?
Well, as we said, the lack of empirical evidence is a big one. Many critics, like Lawrence Krauss, argue that the brain is simply too complex and not isolated enough for quantum coherence to play a significant role.
Right. It's hard to see how these delicate quantum effects could survive in the messy environment of the brain. And what about the ethical implications? The input text mentions Deepak Chopra and quantum healing.
Yeah, that's where things get a little, shall we say, less scientific. Chopra's use of quantum terminology has been criticized by many physicists as misleading and, frankly, bordering on pseudoscience.
So it seems like a lot of fascinating ideas, but a lot of open questions remain. It will be interesting to see how this field develops and if any of these theories can be experimentally validated.
Indeed. It's a field ripe with possibilities, but also with potential pitfalls. Rigorous experimentation and careful interpretation will be crucial to separating genuine insights from wishful thinking, And that's what makes it so exciting to follow.
So we were talking about quantum mind theories and their criticisms. One thing that strikes me is how wide-ranging the interpretations are, from like actual quantum processes in the brain to almost metaphorical uses of quantum language.
Yeah, it's a real spectrum. You have people like Penrose and Hameroff claiming quantum coherence in microtubules is essential for consciousness, while others are simply applying quantum mathematical formalisms to model cognitive processes without any assumption of actual quantum goings-on in the brain.
Like that quantum cognition stuff?
Right, quantum cognition. It's interesting how they use the formalism of quantum probability to explain things like the conjunction fallacy or decision-making paradoxes. Mm. But it's not really about quantum physics in the brain, is it?
No, not in the same way as, say, Orsho R. Quantum cognition is more about using the mathematical tools of quantum theory to model psychological phenomena that classical probability struggles with. Mm-hmm. It's about the structure of thought processes, not the underlying physical substrate. It's like using the equations of fluid dynamics to model traffic flow, you know? It doesn't mean cars are literally liquid.
I see. So it's a different level of description, kind of like how you can describe a gas in terms of macroscopic properties like pressure and temperature, or you can talk about individual molecules bouncing around.
Exactly. It's about finding the most appropriate tool for the job. If quantum probability helps to model certain aspects of cognition, then great. But it doesn't necessarily imply anything about quantum physics happening at the neuronal level.
But then you have people like Deepak Chopra talking about quantum healing and, let's just say his interpretations are even further along that spectrum, closer to the metaphorical end.
Yeah, Chopra's use of quantum terminology raises a lot of eyebrows in the physics community. It's often seen as a misapplication of the concepts, bordering on pseudoscience, even.
Mm-hmm.
It's important to distinguish between scientifically grounded approaches and those that borrow the language of quantum physics without the substance?
Absolutely. It's important to be critical. So going back to the more scientific end of the spectrum, what about those experiments with anesthetics that supposedly support quantum processes in microtubules? The input text mentions some work at the University of Alberta and Princeton.
Those are intriguing, for sure. They're looking at how anesthetics disrupt consciousness, and the findings suggest that quantum processes in microtubules might be involved. But the connection to consciousness is still very speculative. It's a long way from showing that these quantum effects cause consciousness or even play a significant role.
Right. It's one thing to observe quantum effects. It's another to link them directly to subjective experience. The hard problem remains. Heart.
Definitely. And even if quantum processes are involved, we still need to understand how they contribute to consciousness. What's the mechanism? How do these tiny quantum events scale up to influence macroscopic brain activity and conscious experience? Those are the big unanswered questions.
So we've been delving into these quantum mind theories, and one thing that really strikes me is, the sheer audacity of trying to connect something as ethereal as consciousness with the, nitty-gritty of quantum physics.
It's a huge undertaking, absolutely. And the approaches are so diverse. From Stapp's focus on state reduction and conscious acts to Vitiello and Freeman's quantum field theory of brain states.
Mm-hmm.
It's like they're speaking different languages sometimes.
Yeah, exactly. And then you have Penrose and Hameroff invoking quantum gravity and microtubules. It's mind-boggling, but I guess that's what makes it so fascinating, right?
For sure. But it also raises the question, are we even asking the right questions? I mean, trying to find the quantum correlate of consciousness, it's like, are we looking for a unicorn?
Well, that's a good point. I mean, Chalmers' hard problem is still there, looming large. Even if we find quantum effects in the brain, how does that explain subjective experience?
Exactly. And that's where I find the dual aspect approaches so intriguing. This idea of a deeper level of reality where mind and matter are unseparated, like Bohm's implicit order. It's a different way of framing the whole problem, isn't it?
It is. It's a move away from reductionism, right? It's not about reducing consciousness to brain states, whether classical or quantum.
Right. It's more about seeing mind and matter as two sides of the same coin, like two different ways of accessing the same underlying reality.
So, like two different perspectives on the same thing, almost like Jean-Michel Coux wave particle duality in physics?
Yeah, I guess you could say that, though it's even more radical, right? Because we're talking about the relationship between the physical and the mental, not just two different ways of describing the physical. It's a pretty profound shift in perspective.
It is. And it makes me wonder, if we're so focused on finding quantum correlates of consciousness, are we missing the bigger picture? Maybe the real question isn't where in the brain quantum physics is happening, but how this deeper reality manifests as both mind and matter.
That's a really interesting thought. It kind of reframes the whole debate, doesn't it? It's not about locating consciousness in the quantum realm, but understanding how consciousness and the physical world arise from this more fundamental level. It's almost like turning the problem inside out.
It is. And it makes me think about those criticisms of quantum mind theories, like the decoherence problem. If consciousness isn't simply a product of quantum processes in the brain, but rather an aspect of this deeper reality, then maybe decoherence isn't the insurmountable obstacle we thought it was.
Yeah, that's a fascinating idea. It's like, maybe decoherence is only a problem if you're trying to locate consciousness solely within the physical realm. If consciousness is more fundamental, then maybe it transcends those limitations.
Right. It's a whole new way of thinking about it, and it makes me wonder if we need to, expand our toolkit. Maybe we need to go beyond quantum physics, beyond neuroscience, and start exploring other frameworks that can help us understand this dual aspect view.
Absolutely. Things like process philosophy, maybe, or some forms of Eastern thought. I mean, these traditions have been grappling with the mind-matter problem for centuries. They might offer some valuable insights. It's a vast and complex territory, and we're just beginning to explore it. But that's what makes it so exciting, right? The possibilities are, well, they're almost limitless.
So, we've been talking about quantum mind theories and this whole idea of a deeper, psychophysically neutral reality. It's a lot to unpack, isn't it?
It is, yeah. It's like trying to grasp the nature of reality itself through the lens of both mind and matter. It's audacious.
It really is. And the different approaches, it's a real jungle out there. You have compositional views like Chalmers and Tononi, where mental and physical properties are reduced to this neutral domain built up from it, like Lego bricks, I guess.
Yeah, and then you have the decompositional views like Bohm and Himley's implicate order, where mind and matter emerge from this holistic reality by breaking its symmetry. It's like the opposite of reductionism.
Right. Like the whole is more fundamental than the parts. Which is a very quantum way of looking at things, isn't it? All this talk about entanglement and non-locality.
Exactly. And it makes me wonder, are we even asking the right questions? I mean, trying to find the quantum correlate of consciousness. It's a bit like searching for a needle in a haystack, isn't it? Maybe we need to shift our focus. Instead of looking where quantum physics is happening in the brain, maybe we should ask how this deeper reality manifests as both mind and matter.
Yeah, that's a good point. I mean, the hard problem of consciousness is still there, no matter how many quantum effects we find in microtubules or synapses. How do these physical processes, whether classical or quantum, give rise to subjective experience? That's the real mystery.
Absolutely. And it's where these dual aspect approaches get really interesting, this idea of a fundamental level where mind and matter are unseparated. It's a different way of framing the whole problem. It's not about reducing consciousness to brain states, but seeing mind and matter as two sides of the same, well, the same fundamental reality. Like two different perspectives on the same thing.
Right, two different ways of accessing the same underlying reality. Almost like wave particle duality in physics. You mentioned that earlier.
Yeah, exactly. Though it's even more radical than that, right? Because we're talking about the relationship between the physical and the mental, not just two different ways of describing the physical. It's
Yeah.
a pretty profound shift in perspective.
It is. It makes you rethink everything, even those criticisms of quantum mind theories, like the decoherence problem. If consciousness isn't simply a product of quantum processes in the brain, but an aspect of this deeper reality, then maybe decoherence isn't such a big deal after all.
Right. It's like, Maybe we're looking in the wrong place for the quantum connection. Maybe it's not in the brain, but in the very fabric of reality itself. And that's where things get really interesting. It's like, Lang, we need to expand our toolkit. Maybe we need to go beyond quantum physics, beyond neuroscience, and start exploring other frameworks like process philosophy or some forms of Eastern thought that might shed some light on this dual aspect view.
It's a vast, uncharted territory for sure. But the possibilities are incredibly exciting. It feels like we're on the verge of something. Something really big.
It does. And it makes me think about all those mind-matter correlations, those synchronistic events that Jung and Pauli talked about. Maybe they're not so crazy after all. Maybe they're glimpses into this deeper level of reality where mind and matter are intertwined. It's a mystery, a huge, beautiful mystery. And that's what makes it so fascinating to explore. Thanks for joining me on this journey. It's been mind-expanding, to say the least. Until next time.
Mm-hmm.